Good afternoon and welcome to Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez. This is Lori Harrison and I'm here with Allie Smulders bringing you another edition of our show. We're recording this in January 2010 and sitting around the fire with us today is Hal Gillespie, 30-year resident of Lopez who happens to be back for a visit. And Hal's going to enchant us today with some stories of his life and Millie's life here on Lopez and read us some poetry and do a little storytelling too. So welcome, Hal. I guess probably our listeners would like to hear how you came to be up on Lopez this fine week.
Okay. Well, the way it all came about was my wife was a secretary of a church in Everett, and one time she come up here to Lopez to help out the church. The church that is now the community church was a congregational church, and that's what she came from. And she come up to help them with their, it's not with religious stuff, it was with their things that they do other than that in the church. Mm-hmm. And so they were not very experienced at some of that. So she came up to give them a hand. Well, she met this lady at the ferry, and the lady took her around and showed her the island, and they went picked mushrooms. And boy, when she come home, she was really thrilled. She said, "We got to go back up there and look into this place." So with her sister and brother-in-law, well, we came up, and we got mixed up with Ted Ritchie, and he had some land to sell. So we went and looked at two or three pieces, and well, one of them was a 9-acre piece, wooded, had been logged long ago. And so that was one that was in our price range. It was $3,600 for 9 acres.
My. And what year was this, Hal?
And this was about in 1970. Oh, it was early 70s.
Okay.
And so anyway, no, it was earlier than that because I think it was in 55 because that's when we got the property.
Okay.
We moved up here in 72. But so anyway, we got it and we had it on a contract where we each paid $10 a month until the thing was done with, you know.
My, oh my.
And so that was how we got started, and we didn't do anything with that property for a long, long time. It just sat there, but it was good to know that we had a place. Mm. It was right by the airport.
Mm.
Patrick Cotton owns it now.
Okay.
And so anyway, then later on, we heard about this piece of property over on the east side of the island, and we got interested in that, and so it was 130 feet on the water and on a high bank, and it was almost an acre. Mm. And we bought that for $8,000. Well, then we didn't do anything with that for a while, but we had big plans. So finally, I worked for 32 years for the pulp mill and paper mill in Everett, and it collapsed and went away, and I worked then for the school district for a year and a half, and then I went to work for the YMCA taking care of the building for another year and a half. And finally, my wife wanted to come up to Lopez, and I just had never been out of work, you know. That scared me to think that I can't just quit and go up there. But one day I had a bad day, and so I come home and I said, "Okay, get the thing started." Well, it took us another year to sell the house and all the stuff, and then I had to build on to the cabin, because in that meantime, we had Earl Yost come and build our house. Now, Earl Yost, in case anybody don't know, he had the Sunset Builders.
Okay.
And when it was over at the lake, at Hummel Lake, where the Grayling Gallery.
That was Sunset in the Grayling Gallery?
That was the, what it was built for was a hardware store.
No fooling.
And he would come in the morning and he'd open the door and then he'd go out and build houses. Well, if you needed anything from the hardware store, you went over there and you found it and you wrote a little note and said, I got this. And then the next time it was convenient for you, well, you come by and paid for it.
No fooling. And this was in the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the way this whole thing started out. And so I had him come and build a basic house, 24 feet square, on sitting on concrete, partial basement on a hillside on near the water. And so then we knew that we'd have to have more room than the one room. So when we knew we were going to move up, I had a year to come up on the weekends and add another story and some space out behind. And in that space, that was the new part of the building was the washroom and a shop. And later, when we got sewer, we couldn't have sewer there because we were sitting on bedrock. But the good friends of ours across the road and up higher said, you know, if you want to pump it up here, you could do that. And it turned out to be a beautiful place for the drain field.
Okay.
So we pumped 400 feet, and so that's, then we had to have an inside. We'd had an outhouse all this time.
Sure.
Then we had to have inside plumbing, so I built the whole bathroom with the shower and the toilet and the bowl basin and everything, and it was nice. And so that's how we got to be where we were over there on Lopez Sound. And
how did you come to be working for Sunset for all those years? Because how many years did you work for Sunset?
I worked there for almost 25 years.
25 years.
I was, in the first place, there was a friends that had the lot right across from us. And they said, you know, we'd like to, they come out and they would bring their trailer and camp out here. But they said, we'd like to have a little place so we wouldn't have to haul a trailer all the time. So, they said, well, you're not doing anything, why don't you build it? So I did, and that's when I first went up there. And it was 12 feet square.
Oh.
But it had a steep pitch roof. It was kind of an A-frame. And that's where they slept, upstairs, with a fold-down stairway.
Okay.
And so I did that whole thing for them. And then we built an outhouse for him, and then let's see. Anyway, I don't know where to go from here. Because
Sunset. So that brought you in contact with Sunset, and then you actually started working behind the counter.
Yeah, when I got through building the building, then I thought, well, I got to do something. So I heard about a job opening at the school for janitor.
Okay.
And so I went up there and applied for it and got it. Mm-hmm. And I was working there, and Chuck Deitch, that owned Sunset at that time, came over to deliver water to the school because he had a tremendous well at his place. And he saw me there and he said, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm working. Why? He said, I thought you were retired. I said, no, I got to work. Well, why don't you come to work for me? So eventually I did. He had to ask two or three times, but finally I did. And I worked there then for the rest of that time until I took early retirement. And then I did a lot of other jobs.
Uh-huh.
You know, I worked as a well driller, Bud Thompson.
Okay.
I worked with him for a long time. And I took care of the Fish Bay, I mean, the sewer system at the
gosh.
At the village.
Wow.
And I don't know, just all kinds of odd jobs. And
so all kinds of people are going to know you from all kinds of different places here. on
the
Oh,
I think so. I've been, because when I very first come up here, I was doing lawns and house repairs and just anything, you know, just to make a dollar here and there. And we didn't have much. We had, I don't know, had a couple of $100 in the bank and that was it.
My goodness. Well, for the listeners, I just want to say that Hal and I actually just met today. And we had a little conversation earlier on about the golden years. Hal's 90 years old. He'll be 91 in April, this coming April, 2010. I was asking him, when are the golden years? And what did you answer me?
Well, I didn't really answer you yet. I haven't really figured it out. I guess, like Oscar said, they're not here yet. But,
Well, I think you said to me they were the 30 years that you and Millie were on Lopez.
Oh, I guess I did say that. Yeah, because she said these are the best years that we have ever had, you know, because the family was up and gone. And we got, when you first, in those days when we first came here, why, the island was clannish.
Oh.
Very clannish. But, you know, they're friendly.
Okay.
But clannish. You wasn't one of them, so you weren't really included in a lot of stuff that you ordinarily would be until you established yourself. And it took a couple of years. Millie got in with Francis Kring, and they went around and they cleaned houses and they did some.
Really?
Yeah. And so being a friend of Francis Kring, well, that gets you in pretty good, you know. So after a while, we got accepted, and we're part of the whole thing. So it was a good life, and Millie got interested. She started out when the senior lunches first started. She was part of it up there.
She was part of getting it started?
No, but she was there and worked as a assistant cook and dishwasher and all that kind of stuff. And they wanted her to be a cook, but she said, I don't want to take that responsibility. So anyway, that was up at the hall where the Legion is now. I mean, where the senior center is now.
Okay.
And they had the addition, they called it. But at first they brought in a big trailer, and that's where they had it. It's in this 60-foot trailer, but it was only 8 feet wide, you know.
And that's where they fed senior citizens.
Well, that's where they tried it, and they did it for a couple of months, but it was filled, you know, right away. So then they got the okay to move over into the annex there, and that's where she was the most of the time when they were there. She never did go when they moved down to the fire station, so she was through by that time. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of years when she was up there, and it was a really good experience. And
Well, of course, you and Allie are good friends, and Allie had pointed out that you have a published book of poetry here, and I know that this book was published just a few years ago, 2004, I think you said.
No. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
2004.
Right.
And that a bunch of these poems have to do with your time here on Lopez.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering if you could read us or recite some of these poems for us, Hal, and maybe along the way tell us who the poems are about or a little story that might have to do with them. Does that sound okay to you?
Sure. Well, my wife Millie passed away in 2001, and I wrote the book. Well, I didn't write it. I've been writing these poems for over 25 years, and we just had little notes and jots here and there. And my family wanted me to get them all together. And I hesitated for a long time, but I finally got it all together. And this friend back in Omaha had a little publishing outfit, and he said, if you get 25 of your little blurbs, why, then we'll make a book out of them. So it's called Hal's Miscellany, and he published it and copyrighted and all of the necessary things. And it's dedicated to Millie, and the little poem is, I miss so much the loving touch, the eyes that knew my eyes. For Millie and our many years together. Mm. One of the poems is called Old. Well, we walk every day, almost, the same time, the same route, almost, a quarter mile each way, almost, and we almost always stay the same and look the same. Shirt sleeves on the sunny days, and more cover when the season says to deepest winter's rain and cold. The wind makes all the difference when our faces show. We say the same, almost, about how far we can see through the wooded sights when the leaves have dropped and tall ferns lie down. Remember how these trees were small a while ago? We think the same, almost, seeing how things have been in almost 60 years together. This one's called Millie. She went away. I miss her. 10 days, that's not so long. But I come home and the house is cold and there's dirty dishes in the sink. The bed's not made, no time for that. I feed the dogs and think, I'm hungry too. Eggs. Neat little things, eggs. Boiled, fried, scrambled, not much fuss. I check the mail and I wonder what to do with windowed envelopes. How to sort the wash. All the inconvenience. But most of all, I miss her because she's not here.
How many years were you and Millie married?
61.
61. And how many children did you have, Hal?
Had three.
Three?
Yep. One just, the oldest son just had a birthday. Mm-hmm. He's 67. Okay. And then my daughter is, she's over 60. And the younger son is in his late 50s.
Mm-hmm. Do they live near nearby?
My daughter lives in Everett. Mike, the oldest, lives down in Briar, mm-hmm. near Seattle. And my youngest son is on a boat over here in Anacortes. He lives on a big boat.
Mm.
So it's been a good... This one here I wrote for Connie. Now this is Connie Martin, who is now...
White Bear.
White Bear.
Okay.
I saw your little girl the other day. She looks like you. With God's good grace, she'll be like you. And Michael, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I can't remember when or where, but I'm quite sure that I was there. Where there is, I don't recall. Perhaps I wasn't there at all. She drew my image on the wall. It didn't look like me at all. And so I said, how can this be that one so skilled in artistry has missed a look I know is me? And then some came that knew me true and said, it really looks like you.
Is that a poem from Lopez?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most of them, I guess, about half of them was written up here. Old age is there for those most fortunate who have spent the years in trial and grief and happiness and pride and thankful for the blessings. To shade the failing eyes and peer down life's road, hoping to discover new talents and new friends.
You know, my friends and I'm going to be 60 this year, and we've been talking about how old age seems to just kind of move in time. Do you feel like you're in old age yet?
Well, some ways I do, when, you know, physically, mm-hmm. Because your body does tend to fall apart, no matter what you do. I do walk every day. I walk from my place in Everett down to the library, where there's a bunch of old guys get together at the coffee shop and lie to each other a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably over a mile.
Oh.
You know. So I do that every day, and it helps me to stay in shape, because I have sore places, and if I just grit my teeth and go, why, they'll get better after
they limber up, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So it's a different life when you live down in the city than it is here, by far. You know, it's noisy and it's just everybody is in a hurry to get everywhere. You got to watch everything. Mm-hmm. Because they're coming and going and they do funny stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So I walk the same route almost every time I go to town. I don't even know I'm walking it anymore because I'm thinking about stuff. Mm-hmm. And I talk to myself a lot and I talk out loud, mm-hmm. which it used to be pretty bad, but with all the cell phones now, you know, you can do that.
That's true enough. Nobody doesn't, they don't know. You don't have one of those little ear bobs in.
No, you can just say any old thing you want, you know.
Oh, that's great.
And you don't pay any attention.
That's great.
And the other things you have to get used to is people, when they lock their cars and stuff, the horn beeps.
Yeah.
And used to be if a horn beeped, well, you went to find out why, you know.
Oh, right.
And now you don't pay attention. Which is another bad thing, because if somebody beeping at you to get out of the way or something's happening, why, you don't pay any attention to that either.
Uh-huh.
So I guess I have a friend in Everett that lives around the corner. She's 95 years old. Her name is Billy. And I eat breakfast at home and I eat the rest of my meals over there. She's a good cook and she loves to cook and she's a great seamstress. And does a lot of things. She's still doing altering for people, and you know, if I get something that don't fit just right, why, we shorten it, lengthen it, make it
no
bigger.
No kidding.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh.
And she'll turn the cuff or turn the collar or
sure.
whatever. Anyway.
Do you have any advice for those of us who want to live a really vigorous life
just
all the way through?
Keep breathing, I guess. I don't know. I try to eat pretty healthily, but, you know, I don't always do it, but I try. And I watch my weight. I don't want to get heavy. That's the one thing I don't want. So I get on the scales often. If it's leaking a little bit up, why, then I do something about it. So anyway, it's a whole different thing down there. I was born in Everett. I was born out by Lake Stevens in my grandparents' farm.
Really?
And the house is still there. It doesn't look the same, but it's still there. And I don't know. I lose it.
Well, you're in your family place then. You're near your home ground by moving back to Everett and staying.
I am, but it doesn't look the same. It doesn't. Isn't anything
it isn't.
About it the same,
mm-hmm.
you know? Place where they used to be just plain old fields and hills and everything is all covered with condominiums and whatever. Shopping
what?
Places where we used to be in the deepest woods to go and play, you know, and how it's the center of a shopping center or something. So, and Lopez is changing also, in case you hadn't noticed.
I did, but I'm appreciative that it seems to change a lot slower.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, you don't have a bridge, that's why.
That's it. And hopefully we never will. Will you read us a couple more poems here?
Sure. Should I do Og?
Sure, do Og. And then do Stuff. I want to hear this stuff.
Okay. This one's titled Og. A hog and a dog went down to the bog and climbed up on a log. Said the hog to the dog, let's jog. So they jogged and they jogged till they ran into fog and fell off of the log and into the bog. And that was the end of the hog and the dog, according to Frog, who lives in the bog under the log. And this one's called Stuff. Most people associate with this one. I've had it almost all my life, this malady of mine. It doesn't always show, but I have it all the time. It doesn't hurt me physically, and yet I feel depressed. I guess I'll always have it till they lay me down to rest. I know it's not contagious, but I got it from my dad. See, Mom bought everything she saw, and he saved all they had. And now I've got this great collection, and I guess it's here to stay. Stuff not good enough to save, but too good to throw away.
That's a beauty. I love that poem. So, Hal, you got one about John McBaron. What's the history on this, and can you read it for us?
Sure. Well, John McBaron moved here about the same time that we did, and he lived down on the South End, and we got to be good friends. And I used to go down in the later years. I would go down once a week. I was always on a Tuesday. So he was expecting me to come on a Tuesday. Well, I wrote this poem about him when he was still alive. I'd like to share a little poem about this friend I know. He tells me lots of stories, and most of them are so. Now, John McBee can barely see legally. He's blind. But he'll sit there and tell you where, and the date, and the day, and the time of places seen and things he's done, and give the details every one. He recalls names and remembers faces, and there's no end to all the places. He's painting signs and hunting deer, getting drunk on homemade beer. That's pretty good for 92. I can't compete with that. Can you? Well, I was only 82 when I wrote the poem, you see. So
that's a while ago.
So he lived another happy time after that. He was, I think, 96 when he died. So this is one I wrote about. This was one of my first ones, because this is when I lived back in the mainland. It was called Louis. He lived in the woods, a small cabin, one room, always warm, and smelled of smoke. Chopping wood and odd jobs, his needs were small. The neighbor kids and I could visit any time, always a warm welcome. He was a short, chubby, jolly man with a long, drooping, dark mustache. He talked to us like we were men. Well, likes me when me and Joni Paul got stuck on Winter's Ridge one night in snow so deep we couldn't walk. Or we just dug in like Eskimos and ate our sandwiches and laughed. What do you guys do today? Louis Carlson gone these 50 years. These memories are my friends. I did the art, didn't I?
It's a good thing you have this little book, keeping it all together.
We did stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
The one next to John McBaron, to Louis, that was also a good one, I thought, to read.
Well, I don't know. I've got kind of...
But maybe not. You're the best judge when it comes to that.
Yeah, you can turn it off.
Hal, I have the best memories of our storytelling together. You know, under Cynthia's direction, I mean, we told stories and had more fun. Did you also tell stories to Elder Hostel?
I did one time.
Yeah.
That's
what I was thinking. The two of us did that together.
That's right, and that was a fun time. We had a lot of people.
Yeah.
There was a large
audience.
It was down at the Islander, and they'd had an elder hostel, and went up there in the pool room or
someplace. The pool room, that's where we did it. Yeah, that was very nice.
Yeah.
And I remember especially fondly your Irish storytelling, because, you know, hardly anybody can do that with an Irish brogue, except for Hal, and make it sound totally as if he came just from overseas. It was lovely.
Yeah, that was the one I wrote, you remember? The story that I told, I wrote that story about the little people.
About
the leprechauns.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And And this started out, I'll do a little bit of it because it takes 15 minutes to run it through. Well, sir, that day we was having a party. It was a birthday party. A birthday party from my old friend. What was his name now? Let's see. Well, anyway, it's a funny thing about memory, you see, it's gone. But we had the party there, and then he had a bunch of his friends, who were also my friends, and we had this great big cake. Oh, it was a grand chocolate cake with the frosting running down and onto the very platter itself. And we had a punch bowl, a brimming full punch bowl, just full of ingredients, if you know what I mean. Yeah. You know. And we had the music at the fiddle and the fife. And we sang some songs, and we hung around and talked to each other for the whole afternoon. And it was a great time. There was Bill Brewer, Peter Gurney, Peter Davy, Daniel Whitten, Harry All, and Uncle Tom Cobley and all. And we did this for a long time. Well, I looked up finally, and I could look out, and I could see the fog coming in from the sea. And I thought to myself, now look, you've got a long way back to your little shanty, and it's through the woods, and it's going to be dark, and it's fogging, and I think you better get on your way. So that I did. I said goodbye to my friends, and I went down the steps, across the field, and down to the pathway where it went in. And I was walking along in the path, and it was darker in there, and I'm watching the edge of the pathway, and well, I'm not quite as stable on my feet as I usually am because I think I had a little bit too much of the chocolate cake. Hey, it'll do it to you every time, you know.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's the start of it, and it goes on from there, and he got mixed up with the leprechauns. And
wonderful. Well, maybe we can tell everybody that yesterday you did storytelling at the library.
Yes.
And that was fun, yeah. And the little ones were there, and Rosie had to explain that one of the stories was a little scary, and was it okay to tell it? So one of the little boys said, scary is all right for me, but I don't know about the real little ones.
He was about four, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Oh, gracious. Yeah. So you told Little Orphan Annie. Can you tell that again?
Oh, I could do it again, I guess, if it's still in there. I made a few mistakes the first time, and I may do them again. Who knows? But anyway, it's Little Orphan Annie by James Whitcomb Riley. Little Orphan Annie has come to our house to stay and wash the cups and saucers and brush the crumbs away and shoo the chickens off the porch and dust the hearth and sweep and keep the fire and bake the bread and just earn her board and keep. And all us other children, when the supper things is done, well, we gather round the fire and we have the mostest fun a-listening to the witch tales that Annie tells about. And the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. Once there was a little boy that wouldn't say his prayers, and when he went to bed one night away upstairs, why, his mammy heard him holler, and his daddy heard him bawl. And when they turned to Kiverstone, he wasn't there at all. And they searched him in the attic and the rafter room and press, and they looked in all the closets and just everywhere, I guess, but all they ever found was just his clothes and roundabout. And the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. And once there was a little girl who'd always laugh and grin and make fun of everyone and all her kith and kin. And one time when there was company and old folks was there, why, she mocked him and she shocked him. And she said she didn't care. And just as she kicked her heels to turn and run and hide, there was two great big black things a standing by her side, and they whisked her through the ceiling, for she knowed what she's about. And the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. And little orphan Annie says, when the blaze is, burns blue and the lamp wick sputters and the wind goes woo, and you hear the crickets quit and the moon is gray and the lightning bugs in dew is all squinched away, then you better mind your parents and your teachers fond and dear, and cherish them that loves you and dry the orphan's tear, and help the poor and the needy ones that gather all about, or the goblins could get you if you don't watch out.
How were the kids' response to that yesterday? How did the kids respond?
I don't know.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah,
it didn't
scare them.
Sitting
behind
them.
No, it didn't scare them a bit. Yeah, it sounds like the goblins are working here, but actually it's our water softener. So.
That's the ambient noise here. We were going to tell you that it was the wind, but we're telling the truth along with our tall tales here.
Now, another poem that that he wrote, he did a lot of stuff for kids.
Say his name again.
James Whitcomb Riley.
Right.
A good Irish name, isn't it?
It's very good.
Anyway, this one's called The Raggedy Man. Oh, the Raggedy Man. He works for Pa, and he's the goodest man ever you saw. He comes to our house every day, and he waters the horses, and he feeds them hay. And he opens the shed, and we all just laugh when he drives out our little old wobbly calf. And then, if our hired girl says he can, why, he milks the cow for Elizabeth Ann. Ain't he an awful nice raggedy man? A raggedy, raggedy, raggedy man? And the raggedy man, he's just so good. He splits the kindling and chops the wood. And then he spades in our garden, too, and he does most things that boys can't do. Why, he clumb clear up in our big tree, and he shook an apple down for me, and another and two for Elizabeth Ann. And another and two for the raggedy man. Ain't he an awful kind raggedy man? Raggedy, raggedy, raggedy man. Well, the raggedy man, he knows most rhymes, and he tells them, if I be good, sometimes. He knows about giants and griffins and elves and the squidicum squeeze that swallers theirselves. And right by the pump in our pasture lot, he showed us a hole that the wunks has got that can turn into me or Elizabeth Ann. Ain't he a funny old raggedy man? Raggedy, raggedy, raggedy man. And the raggedy man, one day when he was making a little bow and arrow for me, he says, what you going to be when you get big like your pa is? Are you going to own a fine store like his and be a rich merchant and wear fine clothes? What are you going to be, goodness knows? And then he laughs at Elizabeth Ann. And I said, I'm going to be a raggedy man. I was just going to be a raggedy, raggedy, raggedy man.
Oh, Hal. This has been a marvelous hour together, and I know it's about time for you to go catch your ferry and go back to the mainland.
Yep. Got to go. Well, been two or three times a year I get up here, and every time I think, well, maybe this is the last time, and you know, one of these times I'll be right.
And we should mention that come April, you'll be 91.
I'll be 91.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was a marvelous morning sitting around the fire and hearing you tell.
Well, I thank
stories.
You very much for the opportunity. It's been good, and I've enjoyed my stay. I've been everywhere and
seen everybody.
Well, some of them weren't home, but most of them were, and I got them in.
Great.
Yep.
Great.
Okay.
Well, thank you for listening.
Yep.
And hope to hear you. I hope that you will hear us next month when we will be back with another edition of Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez.
This show was pre-recorded.